Good evening.
Good evening.
Such a funny time of year, isn't it? It's full of so much excitement, and yet there's so much not to know at this point. Right on the edge of another year, and because we measure it this way, we come around and start all over again. And it's kind of a wonderful feeling in a way. Oh yes, I will sign up for classes, a friend said to me. Yeah, I'll sign up for a lot of new classes. You feel like there's a whole nother chance to live a life. Just turning around and around the sun. So tonight a gentleman, the same gentleman who asked about Emperor Wu, the Magister, bowed respectfully, of course, and asked again, new question. Your disciple sees monks and lay people who keep chanting Amitabha Buddha, in hopes of being reborn in the Western paradise. Could the Master please tell us if we can be reborn there or not, so that our doubts may be put to rest? The Master said, if Your Eminence will listen, I'll explain. When the Blessed One was at Sharvasti, he preached about the Western paradise in order to convert people. The sutras clearly say it isn't far from here. It was only for the sake of those with shallow roots that he said it, that it was far away. He said it was near for those with greater wisdom. There are two kinds of people, but not two kinds of dharma. Delusion and awareness differ, and understanding can be fast or slow. Deluded people chant the Buddha's name in order to be reborn there, while those who are aware purify their own minds. This is why the Buddha said, as their minds are purified, their Buddha lands are purified. That people here in the East simply purify their minds. If they do that, they will be free of sin. But if people in the West have impure minds and go too far, the deluded among them might wish to be reborn here in the East. The two places are the same. As long as the land of your mind isn't impure, the Western paradise isn't far off. But if your mind gives rise to impure thoughts, chanting the Buddha's name won't get you reborn there. You'll travel 100,000 miles before you eliminate the 10 evil deeds and another 8,000 before you put an end to the 8 wrong ways. But if you just practice with a straightforward mind, you'll be there in a fingersnap. Your Eminence, if you just practice the 10 good deeds, why would you need to be reborn somewhere else? And unless you stop thinking about the 10 evil deeds, what Buddha will welcome you? Once you realize the direct teaching of no birth, seeing the Western paradise only takes an instant. And if you don't realize the direct teaching of the Mahayana, Chanting the Buddha's name to be reborn there will only take you on a long road that never arrives. It's a wonderful practice, this chanting the name of Amida Buddha. There were times in my life when I used to do that, just calling on it wasn't even a thing, it's just calling a name. Calling a name and calling a name as a way of connecting, keeping connected. I think it's very helpful and useful. But what he's saying is, if you keep chanting this name of Buddha in order to get somewhere, it's just like Zazen, you won't get anywhere at all. It's just an endless road to nowhere. Our practice is a very humbling and surrendered kind of practice. It's very modest, very humble. So when he talks about having a pure mind, he doesn't mean never having a bad thought. It just means keeping straightforward and clean and clear about where it is and what we're doing as best we can. It's so easy to be pulled into the emotional side of things and the wrenching kinds of opinions that make us actually into other people. Once we become stained by a certain point of view, a particular point of view that we cling to and then demand that everyone else fit in with it, it becomes you become a kind of other person from who you are. And we all do that. We all have our moments when there are things we want and things we want things to be like. So we just keep coming back and trying to be as straight as we can. Just to be straight and clear. So then the sixth patriarch said, "I'll take your eminence to the Western paradise right now, and you will witness it for yourself. Would your eminence like to see it?" "Well, sure. Let's go there now." The magistrate bowed respectfully and said, "If I could see it right now, why would I need to be reborn there? If the master would be compassionate enough to show us the Western paradise, that would be wonderful indeed." The master said, "I will show all of you the Western paradise, and you won't leave here until you're free of doubt." The assembly was startled, and no one knew what was going to happen. The master said, "All of you should listen carefully. Everyone's physical body is a city. Your eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and skin are the city's gates. These five gates are on the outside, and on the inside is the gate of the intellect. Your mind is the kingdom, and your nature is the king. When your nature is there, so is the king. When your nature is gone, the king's gone too. When your nature is present, your body and mind are present. When your nature is absent, your body and mind cease to exist. The Buddha is a creation of your nature. Don't look outside your body. When you're blind to your own nature, the Buddha is an ordinary being. When you're aware of your own nature, an ordinary being is the Buddha. Compassion and kindness are Avalokitesvara. Joy and detachment are Mahatama. Power and purity are Shakyamuni. Impartiality and directness are Maitreya. The self is Mount Sumeru, and the deluded mind is the ocean. Afflictions are its waves, poisonous thoughts are its malevolent dragons, and passions are its denizens of the deep. Delusions are its ghosts. The three poisons are its hells. Ignorance is its realm of beasts, and the 10 good deeds are its heavens. I always think someone should make a picture of this. It's a wonderful, full of images. But when there is no self, Sumeru, the mountain in the middle of everything, crumbles. When you get rid of delusions, the sea dries up. When afflictions are gone, the waves cease. When poisonous thoughts end, the denizens of the deep vanish. When the Tathagata of your enlightened nature shines the light of wisdom on the land of your mind, the six gates shine with purity. The realms of the six desires become transparent. The three poisons disappear. The hells all vanish. Inside and outside are perfectly clear and no different from the Western paradise. Unless you practice like this, how are you going to get there? Then, of course, the audience saw clearly, suddenly. And the magistrate was very respectful and bowed deeply and said, "How wonderful. How absolutely wonderful." May beings throughout the Dharma realm all be enlightened upon hearing this. So immediately he gave it away. Koban said, "All living beings are Buddhas. It's not becoming an ideal kind of person, but they are essentially Buddhas by daily deeds and actions that we realize it." That's Hui Neng's Zen aspect of Pure Land. It isn't logical faith. We have to feel it. Koban said the basic point is to really know what is self and what is ego. The possibility that God exists is 50%. Probably the sixth patriarch is a good example of how we can be. Red Pine says about Mount Sumeru, this mountain, it's classic. It's in everything that you read about old Buddhism. This mountain is countless leagues high and is the center of every world and is a metaphor for the self. According to the Buddhist conception of the world, this mountain is surrounded by a series of seven oceans, separated from one another by seven mountain ranges. The world as we normally conceive of it, and which Buddhists said was made up of four continents, is outside the seventh range. So, generally speaking, the human being considers herself or himself the center of everything. And then longs for something else. And often it's very hard to know what we're longing for. And it's wonderful to hear someone speak like this, to point to what it is, the land of the mind, and how it is the mind itself that is choosing how to be, choosing to be Buddha or not. The Buddha is a creation of your nature. Don't look outside your body. Red Pine says, all Buddhist practices have nothing to do with anything more or less than the mind. But the mind means the body. There is no mind without a body. So I always say body-mind. There should be one word for this whole conglomeration of eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, mind. It's all of a piece. Kobin said, I myself am a good Pure Land believer. It's not a religion, it's a different style of belief. The source that is expressed is the same. So Pure Land is a very interesting practice, Buddhist practice, because people feel that it's impossible to get there to the Pure Land. It's impossible to discover one's own pure self, the self that can be straightforward and make every effort to be wholesome and direct and clear. They feel it's impossible. So they call on Amida Buddha. And that's a prayer. It's a continual prayer. Just homage to Amida, homage to Amida. And it's in a way, it's a kind of concentration practice if it's seriously done. Or it's a way of learning finally to let go of being the center of everything. So in a way, I think Coben's saying that he himself is a good Pure Land believer. I think it's just about dropping the self. So whether it's done on the cushion or done in the course of the Pure Land, abandoning oneself to Amida, I think it comes to the same thing. We come to the cushion with a kind of pride. We always say it, we have no gaining idea, but I think we always have a gaining idea when we sit down of some kind. If it's only not to fall off the cushion, we're just really determined when we come to sit. And if we sit long enough, we become quite humbled because we begin to realize that, how foolish that is. And I think the Amida callers who are trying so hard because they're impossible become empowered by doing that. And with that kind of empowerment, they lose themselves. They lose their proud self who are going to, no matter what, get to that paradise somewhere. And finally give up. Oh! And you find, oh, it's right here. Look at that. So the world of impurity is the world of the deluded mind. That's all. And at this point I always say we're kindergartners as far as human being is concerned. We just have so little experience being this mind. And finding ways of connecting and directing the straightforwardness of our mind. We're so easily lured off in many different directions. Oh, I want some of that. That candy looks good. Oh, let's climb that mountain. And yet, at the same time, there's this longing. And it's really just longing to be this. So this is a good I like this chapter very much. The two places are both the same. So are there questions, comments? Yep.
Yeah. Coben said it is very important to know the difference between ego and self. I don't really understand that.
You don't understand that?
No. How he uses ego and self.
Well, I suppose it depends on which theory you're talking about as far as ego is concerned. But in Freudian terms, it's the one that wants everything,
right,
is the one that of greed, hate, and delusion. That's the ego, who is in the center of everything, considers itself to be the center of everything, and is completely deluded about how things really are. It's all about me. But the self of the ego is the Buddha.
Okay, so it's another paradigm of saying human nature and Buddha nature.
Well, not really, because Buddha nature is human nature.
Okay.
That's what he's saying.
Oh, right. Okay.
And the only difference is how you comport your mind.
Mm-hmm.
How you choose to comport your mind.
I don't know what comport means.
Well, how to behave, how to enact your life. We have a lot of choices that way. We can be really, really crazy. We can be really, really full of greed, hate, and delusion, and a lot of people go there. And what he's saying is that if you do that, you are living in a dream that is full of suffering. And if you stop doing that, you find that you're not the middle of everything anymore. You actually just aren't the middle of everything anymore, because you're not living like that. So the sumero just crumbles by itself if you realize that living a wholesome life is what you are, what you're longing for.
So when I was learning how to walk Kinhan, someone told me once that this would be your human nature and this is your Buddha nature. So that would not be something like ego and self.
No, I wouldn't think so. No.
Okay.
No, when Dogen talks about dropping the self, I think that's he's talking about ego.
Oh, okay.
So we have to be careful. No, Suzuki Roshi talks about big self and small self. There's the little selfish self, you could say.
Yeah.
And then the obvious connection that once the mountain has crumbled or you see through it, you can see how big everything really is. Yeah. Paul?
This business of going to the Western world, Western heaven or something, I was wondering if born-again Christians are doing a similar practice by accepting Jesus into their lives and forgiving themselves.
It sounds the same, doesn't it?
Yeah, it just struck me. Whether they're deliberately doing that, I don't know. I've never been in a group like that.
They do good works.
Oh, yeah.
That's their whole life, is doing good works. Yeah.
Different words?
Different words, same practice.
Yeah, might be.
Yeah.
Is in the words, and I have to keep reminding myself that we're hearing words that are quite common used in a very particular context.
Mm-hmm.
and that the context itself has been translated over a long period of time. So you've got words like ego, you've got words like sin, you've got words like, you know,
yeah.
so many of them, and they all have all these resonances that, and reverberations that are still coming forward. Even Buddha, the word Buddha or the name Buddha, I find that when I come across it in this context, I always, it's always interesting when it's not capitalized. I tend to, as I'm reading this stuff, I tend to translate it away from an entity, a person, into the idea of just, you know, a more root sense of Buddha as enlightenment, as I understand it.
Yes.
So, it's just so much baggage hanging off every word that we're using.
I agree. And it's new here. And we're just desperately trying to find words that connect in some way to what, who knows what Wei Neng really said.
Right.
We're just getting this version of it that somebody kindly tried to throw at us in another, in our language. And so it's, you know, Buddha just means awake.
That's what I'm trying to
awake.
Translate it as.
Yeah.
It's like my Buddha nature is not to, it's not my nature to be like the Buddha. I mean, the Buddha may,
is to be awake as you.
As me, yeah.
Yeah.
And then when we find ourselves like trying to parse and split the difference between self and ego, it's like, you know, Calgon, take me away.
Yeah. I'm not even sure that the Chinese had a particular word for ego or not.
I doubt it.
Self, you know?
Yes.
You have to read the what he said, and if you want to get into semantics.
Yes.
But there is some kind of a concept behind it. You know, but I think it's very elusive. You know, you have to just... I think self is okay, you know. But, you know, like Coben said, big self, small self, or true self and kind of other self, this super self that we build up through all of our experiences and delusions and everything like that, you know, and then it becomes real to us. But behind it,
mm-hmm.
I think the red is this. There's something else, like a more true self, in a sense, or
yeah.
a more real self.
Authentic.
But, you know, it's hard when you start putting Freudian terms on it or our modern language, it is hard.
It's confusing.
I don't know if anybody knows.
We need to rewrite all of this. So
that's why it's a practice.
have to talk to Red Pine.
That's why it's a practice.
That's why it's a practice and not a thinking thing.
Exactly. You find out for yourself by practicing.
Yes.
Not so much by reading.
And that's what Coben said. Yes. You have to feel it. You don't figure it out. You can't figure it out.
No.
Just sit. And yeah.
It's so simple, it's hard to explain.
Yes. Yes. It's impossible.
Well, I think that, I mean, for me, that's the basic thing here, what you said. But I'm trying to remember a story, and I don't know if you will remember this, if it's something the Buddha actually said or something from literature, that the words are like a boat, the teachings are like a raft,
mm-hmm.
and that once you get to the shore, you don't need that anymore.
Right.
You can let it go, destroy it, or just let it go back into the ocean. So if you think of the words as a raft or something, a vehicle, I guess, that is meant to help us it's still really, I mean, I agree, it's so confusing if you start to actually think about what the words mean and all the baggage of Western psychology on top of that, of ego and self. And, but still, it's a structure that has been built up over the years to help us navigate.
I think that's really right. That's exactly right. Sometimes we say the words are pointers, that they're pointing to something that we can't say.
Yeah.
You know, it's impossible to actually say it, but it can point to that place in us. Mm-hmm. So if we take it as something in the book, already it's a distortion. And So it's very tricky. Your atmosphere is really, really tricky. So don't worry about it. Yeah, just sit. Just sit. That's all you need. Well, it's after 8. Last. Yes.
So I was thinking, maybe I can think of it like this. There's Buddha nature, and there's human nature, which is self. And then within human nature, somewhere there's that ego, and I can just leave it in there somewhere.
Mm.
Do you think that makes sense?
No.
It's pretty complicated.
Okay. Anyway, and then I'll just forget about it.
Can't quite see that one.
Okay.
Yeah, just sit. And try not to be too selfish, really.
Yeah.
That's the main thing.
Yeah.
Well, I have an announcement.
Good.
The Saturday sit in January, the half-day sit, is on the 14th, which is not what was on the calendar that was distributed. But it's, I believe it's correct on the website.
Okay, the second week
yes.
of January. Okay. Heading into the new year. More sitting.
I have an announcement too. So I just wanted to say, I invited some friends and some family to come sit at Jukoji for New Year's, and there it's between December 30th and January 3rd, and we have a really cool lineup, and all the Jukoji residents are helping out and supporting, and Nico is actually going to be the Tenzo. And so there's 3 full days, and on the first day it will be the 31st, and Mike Newhall is leading a ceremony, and then on the first, Angie's coming to do a Dharma talk, and on the second, Jana is doing a Dharma talk, but lots of people are helping out, so it'll be really fun. So. And all these people, there's like 10 of us, and all these people are really new to Zen. You know, they've never been exposed to the practice.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited to, together with the Jikoji residents, give them a really good first impression of Zen.
Nice friend you
are. Can we just show up? Do we have to like sign up or something? Or call? Or
yeah, I think you can just show up.
It's like all day or something?
Yeah, I mean, it's
tell Nico you're going to show.
It's 5. Oh yeah, that's right. It's five days long, and so the people that are coming from different places that are like friends and stuff, they are committing to come for the whole period.
Yes.
Because it's like their introduction, but
like a session.
Yeah, but if you want to come for a day or something, it'd be cool.
Well, I have to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only reason you would have to sign up would be if you wanted to have a room, but otherwise it's it's just open.
It's in the regular Zendo, right?
I'm almost certain, yeah.
Yeah, it's in the large Zendo.
That's a pretty big room.
Yeah, it is.
There's plenty of room.
It is in the large end, though.
Okay. I know there's plenty of food.
Yeah.
And Eric is waking up at like 3:30 to make sure the Zendo is warm.
Oh, gosh.
Okay. He's actually not waking up. He wakes up like at 1.
That's true. That's
see, he's just going into the Zendo to start the fire.
Yeah, that's true.
Or something.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's great. Oh, it's really wonderful.
Good.
We'll launch the year.
Yeah.
Damn, just like that.